Hi, everyone. This is Pam Stack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Today, I'm especially pleased because one of my favorite people, as well as authors, is with me, along with a debut novelist who is with him on book tour. Brian Panowich penned a book called Bull Mountain. I have to tell you, it is one of the best pieces of literary fiction I've ever read. Brian and I will argue about whether it's literature or whether it's noir or crime fiction, but I will tell you that very rarely does the New York Times Book Review give such an outstanding blurb of praise for a novel. This is what they had to say. Panowich pulls off a daunting undertaking with astounding success. The storytelling is mesmerizing, with virtually every chapter set in a different timeline and focused on a single character. But the sense of immediacy carries over into each era. And while the violence is shocking in its cold-hearted brutality, it's as aesthetically choreographed as any ballet. High praise indeed from my friend and Anthony-nominated author, Brian Panowich. Hi, Brian. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm so glad to talk to you again, my friend.
Hi, Pam. Thanks for having me. It's always fun to be on the show.
Thanks. It's been a while since we chatted, and I'm really excited that you're going to be at Thriller Fest, and I'm more excited that we're going to see each other again at BoucherCon. I'd like to take a minute, though, before we start talking, to introduce your friend and our other author on the show, J. Todd Scott. I don't know much about Todd, but this is what I read about his new book called The Far Empty, which, by the way, is one of the coolest titles for a book I've ever heard. J. Todd Scott's The Far Empty is so good I wish I'd written it. The poetic and bloody ground of West Texas has given birth to a powerful new voice in contemporary Western crime fiction. That was said by Craig Johnson, who writes Longmire, who's been a guest on this show. I'm so glad to welcome Todd Scott to the show. Hi, Todd. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. Brian has been raving about you, and anybody who's on book tour with Brian Panowich has got to be like a really strong guy and be a really great writer. So I'm glad you're both here. I want to talk first. I'm going to talk to Todd first about his book, The Far Empty. First of all, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself and how you decided to write The Far Empty?
Well, I am a federal agent. I've been a federal drug agent with DEA for over two decades now, 20-plus years. And, that's my day job. And I always had an interest in writing. You know, I hadn't taken it seriously in a very, very long time. But a few years ago, thought if I didn't now, I never would. And I was living in Texas at the time. I've since been transferred with my job. If there's any one constant with federal law enforcement, it's move, it's change. But I was in Texas at the time and had this kind of story idea come to me. Had the first line of the book kind of written on a scrap of paper for about a year before I wrote the book itself. And sat down one day and dug into it and ended up with The Far Empty.
What is the premise of this story? Can you give us the elevator pitch?
Sure. In short, it's a book about a corrupt sheriff, his missing wife, and their 17-year-old son. And that's where it starts. It's a kind of a story about a father and a son. And then I toss in a bunch of, drug trafficking and other corrupt cops and, young sheriff or young deputy sheriffs and just kind of shake it all up and see where it ends up at the end.
Probably is the most fun to do it like that. You've gotten some really great reviews on the release of this book. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I would imagine that you were able to pluck from your own personal experience some of the things that you used in your book. But I hope not so many bad law enforcement officers, although I don't know because I've never been in law enforcement. Did you have fun writing this, Todd?
Yeah, no, I had a tremendous amount of fun writing. I had the advantage of not knowing what the hell I was doing. And so, you know, that took all the pressure off. I had a story I wanted to write. You know, I hadn't, like I said, I hadn't written seriously in a very long time. So not knowing what I was doing, I sat down and threw everything I had at the page. You know, it was the story I wanted to tell about characters that fascinated me. And it didn't matter to me whether the book was, you know, interesting to anyone else or whether it sold. I just, you know, couldn't wait to get up every morning, which is what I do. I get up and write before I go to work. I couldn't wait to get up every morning and see how the story ended myself. So I had a lot of fun writing it. It's arguably not a fun book. You know, some people find it kind of bleak, but I sure had a lot of fun putting it together.
So I'm interested in your statement that I had no idea what I was doing, and so you could do whatever you wanted. Ignorance is bliss, I guess, when you're sitting down to write your first novel, right?
Yeah, no, I mean...
Are you writing your second book now?
Well, the second one is already done, and I'm actually looking at the first pass pages this weekend, so it'll be out next year. Putnam is, you know, my publisher is pretty excited by what I'm doing, so I'm about halfway through the third book. And then we've got a fourth one on, you know, after that. So I went from writing nothing to writing a bunch.
So I want to ask you two questions. You do not have a series character. You're writing standalone books?
No, the first three books that I'm writing, The Far Empty and then the two after it, are all kind of part of a series. Not all the same characters, but generally all set in that same area. Some of the characters carry through. And then I have a standalone book that Putnam really likes that, you know, we'll step back from the Big Bend area for a book and try something a little bit different.
So being as how the first book, you got to do everything you wanted to do because you didn't know what not to do, how did it feel penning your second book?
You know, it was, I think, a more stressful, to be honest. And, I, you know, Brian and I have talked about this. I think we both kind of faced that for our second books. You know, the first one was organic. It was an idea I had kind of had bouncing around, or at least I had a first line. The second one, you have to kind of write, you know, on demand. You have expectations. People are waiting for it. You know, you can't waste a lot of time, you know, finding the story. You have to get it done. So it was a different sort of process, more stressful, but I think I'm just as happy with the end result. And if the first book, you know, I said I didn't know what I was doing, and the second book, I'm not sure I knew a hell of a lot more, but by the time I got that one done, I feel now like I can do it. You know, now I can write books. So.
How wonderful. So let's bounce this over to Brian Panowich. Brian is Anthony. Well, Brian's been nominated for a lot of awards, but we're particularly excited because Bull Mountain has garnered so much praise and an Anthony nomination, which is a huge. That is not to say all the other awards aren't meaningful as well. Brian, this, in fact, is not your first book, is it?
This is my first novel. I've never written anything over 1,000 words before Bull Mountain.
Ah, okay. So I was looking on your website, which you're really bad about keeping up, but that's okay. I love you anyway.
I know, we're friends.
I can say that to you. So I was looking at your website, and you do have other work listed. Tell me about what else is on that page.
All of the stuff that I had released prior to Bull Mountain was part of a workshop that me and some of the other guys from ShotgunHoney.net had put together.
Right.
It was a writing group. We've never met face to face. One of the guys lived in England, another one in Pennsylvania, another one in Missouri. And it was Ryan Sales, Chris Leak, myself, Isaac Kirkman, and the incredibly talented Chuck Reagan. And what we would do is we had this somebody was into something. Like Chuck was into science fiction. Pull that out of the hat, and we'd all write a short story about some type of science fiction. And I'm not a science fiction guy at all, so it pulled me out of my comfort zone. And that was kind of the idea. And when it was my turn, I picked Westerns. And so, you know, Chuck and Ryan, who write, you know, horror and
right.
science fiction, had to write a Western. So, it got kind of nuts, but it was an exercise. And the first one was about zombies. None of us were really into zombies, but we were going to do it anyway just to see if we could pull it off. And it was just fun. It was a way to get step outside yourself and do something that you've never done before. We ended up collecting them as compilations, and they sold a few. So
is that maybe I should
really
shoot you in the face? Is that the one? Is that the one?
That?
Maybe I should just shoot you. Is that the book?
Maybe
I should just shoot you in the face.
Maybe I should shoot you in the face. Yeah, that was
right.
The title
now
of the
I
one
noticed
that
the introduction is by the wonderful Paul Brazil, so that is fabulous. You have some really great writers in there, and fantastic.
We brought names in for the intro. Like, we brought big guys in to do an intro for people
sure.
you've never heard of. We thought that would be cool.
Right, and I see Mark did the photograph, and Mark's a fantastic photographer, so that's great.
Well, you know what,
now,
though? Those little books led us to the Trouble in the Heartland collection, which
right,
is the
where
Bruce
I was just
going to
mention
idea.
That. Right, that was the one that Joe Clifford created.
Chris Leake and Joe did that. I got to give Chris his props because it was his story, Candy's
right.
Room, that started the whole thing.
And so you have a whole lot of really killer authors in that as well. And it is
we got
a
Dennis
fantastic
Lehane
book.
In that book, man.
I know, but you know why? Because Dennis and Joe went to school together at FIU North in Miami. That's how
whatever.
That came about, by the way.
I
know. You got Todd in there,
Dennis
Todd Robinson and Les
yep.
and Hillary Davison. You've got Chris Holmes in there. You got a ton of really great people. So I'm
Ferris
really glad to see
that.
Book. Yeah, everybody. So, and this book feels like old home week to me. And of course, last year it was nominated for an Anthony as well. Unfortunately,
right.
did not
you know
get
what,
it, but
damn,
deserve
like,
it should
it,
have.
It, what, even just being up there next to all these traditionally published books, that was something that we like created in the basement. You know, like we stirred up some shit in the basement.
I know.
And
I know
and
you
it
did.
Was on par with anything that they make in Kentucky. So for me,
I believe you.
An accomplishment.
Okay, I want to talk about Theo and Fat Terry. Tell me about that.
Man,
you
me,
got it up
me,
there. I gotta ask.
Special agent, me and Special Agent Todd Scott. There, we're talking about that earlier today, man.
Yeah.
The very first story. That's the first thing I ever wrote, Pam. It was the very first thing I ever wrote. I came in from the fire station one day, and I was like. My huge pet peeve, the one thing that I think that I should eradicate from the earth are title pawns. I think that they're as evil as any drug dealer who sets up on a corner.
Okay.
They just prey on people and they prey on their faith and use money as a tool as a drug. And
right.
it's awful and it's heinous. So I was having this tirade. I was telling the guys at my firehouse a tirade about how bad I hated Title Max. And they were like, man, you should write that down and turn it into an editorial, send it to the paper. Well, I don't do, like, nonfiction. So I turned it into a fiction story of about two guys that are just driving across East Georgia blowing up title pawns. they're driving a 71 LTD, and they've got a trunk full of C4. And you never find out why or where they got the explosives from or any of that. They're just blowing them up because, well, why the hell shouldn't they? It's just the right thing to do.
How funny. How
and then,
funny.
You know, shit goes south and they end up getting caught. But it's more of a comedy than anything else, man. They talk about, like, if you could fuck them up, which one would it be? You know, it's more about
right,
a dialogue.
Right, right.
But it was a lot of fun to write. I never thought anybody would ever read it. People have,
but stuff's pretty popular. Your stuff is pretty popular, and as a matter of fact, you're kind of a go-to guy right now, Brian, for a lot of the noir guys up and coming. I know that you're friends with everybody, and they ask you an awful lot for your advice and you know, and how to help them, and that's really cool. I want to just mention that one of my favorite writers of all time, C.J. Box. Blurbed your book, and this is You know, C.J. Box is a really interesting fellow because while he writes crime fiction, he is very family-oriented in every one of his books. It is totally about, his motivation is about family. So this is what he wrote about Bull Mountain. Brian Panowich had me at the first word of his spectacular novel, Family, and he held me until the last page. Bull Mountain is a sprawling, gritty, violent, tribal, intergenerational crime epic with a deeply rooted sense of place and a gut-punch ending I didn't see coming. Expect to see Bull Mountain on the short list of many best first novel awards. And, of course, it has been. So good for you. Good for you. And that's a really nice blurb from Chuck Box.
It was fantastic.
One of the nicest men
humbling.
You'll ever meet. One of the nicest
humbling.
Guys you'll ever meet and one of the most talented guys you'll ever meet. So, so now you guys are on book tour. I want to talk about what it's like to be on book tour. Todd, I want to know what it's like to be on book tour with Brian. And then I want to know.
I got to clear that up, Pam. We are not touring together. We are touring simultaneously.
Not.
Right.
Simultaneously.
Book,
okay.
Right. His book came out and my book came out in paperback relatively
paperback.
At the same
okay.
time. So they
oh,
had
okay.
us, they
I,
had
I
us
misunderstood.
Both out on the road doing the same thing. No worries.
Okay.
I wish
so
I could have been with him. I'd probably had bigger crowds.
You may have. I don't know if that's right or not. So
unless they have
so
warrants,
Todd,
man, they ain't gonna show up. If they got warrants.
Okay, so Todd, here's what I want to know.
Okay.
You're a debut novelist whose book is by a big house. Putnam is no small potatoes at all, and they're very good about sending their authors out. So, what did it feel like for you to be on a book tour, however long it was? How did you feel about that?
Well, I've been out for 2 weeks, and it's just pretty much wrapped up now. And I mean, it was a surreal experience. I'm in the middle of a, because I still have my job, and you know, I took a few
right.
weeks off to handle this. But you know, I'm in the middle of giving my talk or answering some questions, and my phone's going off, and it's the agents I work with telling me about 20 pounds of meth they seized and $500,000 they found in a closet. So, I'm doing that on the one hand and then talking about this book
sounds
I wrote.
Sounds
like
my tour, man.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah, for different reasons, though.
Yeah, it was my guys calling me saying, man, hey, man, they found my meth, man. They took it and they took my.
So, as much as I was trying to pretend to be, a full-time author, the fact is, I've been doing this other thing for a long time and you can't escape it. But, it was a dream come true. And, you go meet people that, you otherwise wouldn't get to know. I found some long-lost family members in one part of Texas. They showed up with a genealogy chart that looked pretty legit, so I think I'm actually related to them. They were excited by it.
Good for you.
But, and of course, as a debut author, not many people have yet read the book, but so you're trying to pitch them a little bit. But there were
sure.
people out who had read the book and were very excited by it and, couldn't wait to talk to me about it. And that was, that was exciting because people are reading your words and they want to talk to you about it and find out if tell you their opinions. And that's great.
Well, so let me ask you this. What do your fellow agents think about you writing a book and being on a book tour? Are they busting your chops?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I kept it kind of hidden for a while, but, they're agents, and eventually they investigated and figured it out, and I started getting emails with my Amazon listing and, stuff like that. And they've been very supportive. They all say the same thing, though, which is, damn, that's a big book. We're never going to read all that. They think it's cool. And, those that have gotten through the first couple chapters have been nice enough to say, you really seem to know what you're doing. You don't know jack shit about being an agent, but you may know a little bit about writing.
Right. You've only been doing it for 20 years or so.
Yeah.
You don't know anything yet. You're still the rookie, right? So you're not
right,
only
exactly.
are you a debut novelist, you're the rookie. Ryan, I don't know. What do you think about all this? I know that you're one of the friendliest guys who ever. You like doing book tour, don't you?
I enjoyed it. it's a mixed bag, Pam. I have four small children and a beautiful wife that cannot take it. So when I'm out on the road, because I'm pretty much the hammer at the house. When I'm gone, you know, they become this tornado of chaos. And so,
oh boy,
knowing that that's happening, and that my wife works full time, and she is she's very cosmopolitan and very independent, and having to do because I'm the housewife, you know, I'm the fireman, I work 24 hours, I'm off for 48, so I'm home, and I'm the guy that's home with the kids all the time. So when I'm off on the road, it's tough on her. So although I do enjoy it, and I love meeting people, and I'm Gabby, and I love to talk about books. At the same time, I know that my house is slowly crumbling, and I need to get back, you know, before it all hits the, you know, fan. I do enjoy it.
You working? Have you completed your next book, Brian? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Say that again.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I've completed it twice. You see, and that's what I wanted to talk to I call him JT. I'm gonna call him JT. He told me I could, and I'm gonna go for it.
Good for you.
But when we were talking earlier, we had something very similar happen to us. When I wrote Bull Mountain, it was a standalone novel. There was no coming back to those characters. I had plans of North Georgia being the central character, and that's it. And I'm pretty sure that T had the same idea. He was going to write stories based around that area. But never really intended for a series to pop out of it. But Putnam, and we also share an editor, him and I, Sarah Minnick Blackburn, who just had a baby and is beautiful, beautiful boy. But she had a vision that these characters should go on. And then once they hit the streets, these books have taken on a life, and these characters people have related to and want to see more of. Well, you see, I had already written a second book that had nothing to do with Bull Mountain. That was not exactly the way they wanted to go. So I ended up having to completely start from scratch and go in a different direction so that I could have these characters come back into play. So it took me – I actually wrote two books. Let's say it that way.
Wow.
And the first one I wrote will be something that will come out later on, but
I see.
And it'll most likely be a standalone novel. I'm going to change the characters up completely and take it out of Bull Mountain completely. So yeah, the second book is done, but I had to write it twice in order to have that happen.
Was it difficult for you to get from the mindset of Bull Mountain is now behind me, other than the promotion and so on? You know, obviously it's now in paperback. But from now you have to resurrect certain characters and create a whole new storyline. Even though I agree, North Georgia is a very strong character in your book. And it's amazing how location, if you bring it in and it's that strong and it becomes a character, really enriches the book. But was it difficult for you to go back and say, okay, now I gotta pull all these guys out of the closet essentially and start all over again?
It was incredibly difficult. In fact, I didn't do it. I didn't do it the way that you would expect me to have done it. In Bull Mountain, the main protagonist's name is Clayton Burroughs, and he's pretty much the heart of the book. This second novel, which is called Like Lions, Kate Burroughs, his wife, is the main protagonist, and it has a completely different feel. Women obviously think and do things differently than men, and so it has an entirely different appeal. The first book, Bull Mountain, is very father and son, and Like Lions is very maternal. It's mother and cub. That's kind of what I wanted to do. Are you familiar, Todd, are you familiar with there's a comic book called Lone Wolf and Cub that came out a long time ago. Do you know what I'm talking about? About the samurai and with his baby boy. That is what I envisioned for the second book. You know, that's what I wanted to do. Wanted to do this single mom and her cub, and she has, you know, gone through all of this horrible violence of a man's world, and she's starting over, and it finds her anyway because of who she is, her name,
right,
and who her son is, and the lengths that a mother would go through to protect her son, which I think is something that you and me can't understand.
Right.
You know, obviously we love our children, and I would go to the end of the earth for them. But there's a connection between a mother and their offspring that we as men, just even though we might think we do,
right,
we'll never get.
Yep.
And that's,
yeah,
what I wanted to,
well,
explore.
True.
You know, I wanted to take a good person and see just how desperate she would be if you know, her children were threatened.
How was it writing from the female point of view for you?
It was incredibly difficult. Incredibly. And I think I second guessed pretty much every word of it. So I had to bounce it off the women that I had based these characters on, starting with my wife, my mom, my mother-in-law, my sister-in-law, all of these people that live in North Georgia that inspired me to write about women, and that pretty much defy the stereotype of what you think about Southern women. Everything I wrote, I ran through them first. Would they do this? And I got very honest answers. Of course not. I would never do that. And so that I'd go in a different way. A lot of things I kind of felt like I knew, because of the fact that I live with such a strong woman. But at the same, and I have three daughters, you know, and that's what this book is
right.
supposed to be. This book is a champion for my three daughters, so that when they're of age, they're entitled to and are respected in every way, the same way that I would be, or Todd would be, and that's what. If I only have one shot, Pam, if this is the last book I ever write, let it be known that is what I'm intend to do.
Sure, that is your homage to the females in your life. Brian, did you find that when you wrote the dialogue, you wanted to talk it out loud so that you could hear if it sounded natural for the female POV?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's something I really didn't have any trouble with. Dialogue is something that I have been schooled in from a very young age, because I am a Elmore Leonard fanatic. And he does dialogue better than anybody on the planet.
Anybody.
And nobody. You can strip, I've said this before, and I've said it a lot, you can strip all of the action out of an Elmore Leonard novel and just leave the dialogue, and the story will still
dialogue and know the story. It's true. You know, I never thought about it like that, but you write it well.
The way he did women and the way he did children or comedy or whatever it was that he was writing, it was a dialogue that nailed it and threw it over the top. So I feel
Absolutely.
Like that's my strength. In fact, Sarah's always trying to cut my dialogue out.
That's funny. Todd, when you're now writing your next, your third book in this, do you have more confidence in your dialogue? you've got some books under your belt.
Him and David Joy just show up out of nowhere and start burning these novels out, man. They got like three books already in the can. Oh yeah, you know, I've got like deal. I'm booked up till 2027. You know, it's cool, man. You know. Yeah. Well, you guys can kiss my ass, because it does not work like that for me.
Well,
I just told
a special agent,
the DEA, to kiss my ass on the radio. How about that?
You're not the first guy to do that. Trust me.
Yeah. And it'll live on in infamy in iTunes too. So
yeah.
There you go.
Yep. Yep. There's the blurb
funny.
Right there for the show.
There you go. So Todd, when you were writing, did you think back to any of the authors that motivated you, or whose style that you liked particularly, that kind of kept you on track? Was there, you know, I love Elmore Leonard, so I'm right with Brian on that. The man was just a writing genius. There's no doubt about it. What about for you?
Oh yeah, I mean, there's a lot of touchstones. You know, some of them are more, you know, atmospheric than the actual language that they use. But I'm obviously a huge Cormac McCarthy fan. I'm an Urban Waite fan. I'm a huge fan
Urban
of
Waite.
Yeah, you know, James awesome. Carlos Blake. I think he's a fantastic writer. I mean, since I was kind of working, I was consciously working, you know, a Western. I mean, I wanted that as a
right.
as a touchstone. So those were the sort
sure.
of books that I was looking to. And, you know, the other thing, we were talking about dialogue and stuff like that. I'm like Brian. I enjoy writing dialogue. I enjoy, you know, having people talk, although I think in my first book, In the Far Empty, it's more internal in some respects than external. There's, you know, in the other books, there's more, you know, kind of give and take and talking between characters. And what I found is that, you know, cops are great storytellers. So, you know, when you spend as much time as we do, you know, sitting on surveillance or staring at empty houses or, you know, you're trapped together. You're just hanging out
sure.
with people. And all you do is tell stories. I mean, two-thirds of them are bullshit. I mean, they're not true, but they're, you know, they're stories.
Yeah,
about,
I'll agree with that.
You know, I mean, I'm sure the same thing happens at the firehouse. You know, it's guys
yeah,
sitting
I'm
around.
Also gonna say that, I'm also going to say that we got you beat in the storytelling yeah. department, too.
Yeah, but that's,
fire,
you know, it's...
Firemen are better at it than cops.
You know, but it's guys sitting around.
Because we do less.
and so I think that sort of conversation, that sort of rhythm, that sort of dialogue ends up in probably both of our books, because that's what we sit around and do. I mean, we bullshit.
Yeah.
We talk all the time.
Well, I think dialogue
yep.
is critical if it's as long as it's pushing the story forward. I have read plenty of books where I'm thinking, geez, you're talking too much, you know, or there's an internal, like a bubble over a character's head that's kind of telling me why what his motivation is. And I one thing I will say, having read Brian's book and knowing his dialogue, is that you know, the smart writer allows the reader to assume a lot of things and to form their own opinions and to kind of form their opinion about motivation and everything else. So I'm so glad to hear that you are a dialogue person. Do you start your books with a story or you start your books with a character, Todd?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both. I had the opening line of my book, which is, you know, my father has killed three men. I had that written on a scrap of paper, and I just didn't have quite a character to go with it. But as I was making this long drive between two towns out in West Texas, there was 2-hour drive. There's, you know, there's nothing out there.
Uh-huh.
I kind of thought what it would be like to grow up in that area, you know, to be a kid in that area. And, you know, then I took the next logical step. What if your dad, you know, you didn't have a good relationship with your dad and you're trapped out here, stuck in this kind of desolate, you know, border area, you know, how shitty that would be. And then the next
right.
step is, what if your dad was just a really horrible person and you were trapped with him, but everybody thought he was great. He was famous or infamous. And so then I immediately came up with the character of Caleb Ross. That's the 17-year-old son of the sheriff.
Right.
And that's the voice
uh-huh.
that says, my father has killed three men. And then you ask yourself, all right, he's killed three men. Is it because they needed killing, or is it because he wanted to do it? And then the plot starts to come in to focus. So, you know, with The Far Empty, it started with a character, and then shortly after that, the rest of the plot fell into place.
How did you get
your
the title?
Very
of your...
character-driven, I would say. Very character-driven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get so
That's
invested
great.
In the kid that the plot almost takes second to his safety, I think.
Yeah, and
well,
Caleb
well, see,
is the
I
only
think yours
character.
Is too. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, what was that?
No, well, I was going to say that Caleb is the only character that's in first person. You know, it's my, me, this, that, and, you know, everyone else.
Sure.
Because I kind of rotate through a bunch of different characters, and Brian does too. He rotates through characters and time.
Right.
I rotate through characters and place a little bit. And, you know, we both have this kind of big cast of people. So I think both books are very, you know, character driven. We got a cool plot that kind of propels what the, you know, the action, but it's how
sure.
these characters deal with that action that I think makes both books interesting.
Well,
and
I will say this. Go ahead, Brian.
Go ahead, oh, I was going to say
about your book.
Very similar in that way.
Yes, I agree. You know what, Brian? Your book is so powerful because each of your characters has something very strong to say, has strong motivation. But more than that, I think that your book would stand well regardless of the storyline because of your characters and their dialogue. I think that it's just that well done. It's a beautifully, exquisitely written book. Not that the story isn't harsh. It's a very difficult story to read. You know, if you have any humanity at all in you, you recognize that this is a very difficult book. It is shocking. But I truly appreciated the fact that I felt like I walked away from your book knowing your characters very well and knowing a culture that was very unknown to me, North Georgia. You know, a place that I'm not familiar with. Even though I have a relative in Georgia, but it's certainly not North Georgia. So it was really, really terrific.
I'm glad because that was exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to demystify some of the stigma that goes along with what they call the outlaws or mountain people that live up there.
Right. Right.
They are not what you think. Now I in no way condone the violence or the things that are going on up there, and it's very, very real, our epidemic of meth and prescription medication.
Right.
But that being said, these people do not think they're outlaws. You know, these people are doing what they have been doing for the past 70 years.
Well, they're survivors.
Right.
They're right.
They're too to survive. Sure, it's like people that used to sell moonshine and everything, you know. Listen, my mom's father used to brew up home brew in the basement, you know, just for extra money. I mean, this is years ago. I didn't even know him. I think I met him once, but so I understand that they do not think. Maybe that's why.
Well,
some people.
It's deeper than that, Pam. Because if you think about it, all right. And when Prohibition happened, that was
right.
And JT, you got to agree with me, man. That was probably the biggest fuck up in the history of the United States government. I mean, it created monsters all
yep.
over the country.
Yes. Yes.
And these monsters that it created, the ones that you read about all the time, like the Al Capones and the Cosa Nostra,
right.
that are in these urban areas, when Prohibition ended, they were able to invest the money that they made off this huge hiccup into these other businesses and go into whether
right.
they be legitimate or illegal. And they were able to generate revenue. The Southern man got fucked because he didn't know there was nothing else to do, man. They had all they had were routes.
It is almost
the ability to
generational
make.
Though, isn't it, Brian? It's generational. It's cultural. It is geographical.
It's the same as it is now as it ever was. The opportunities are limited. And so they didn't have any choice in their minds but to move on to the next illicit substance that would make them enough money to keep the lights on.
Right.
And
I understand that.
That's how it is.
Yeah.
It's like that today.
I guess, do you think that, see, I look at your book and I think it's literary fiction, literary, even crime fiction. I've heard you talk about this before when you and Joe Clifford were on the show before and you talked about it. You know, you had a discussion whether it was noir or not. I don't know that I would agree that it is noir, but it definitely is literary.
I don't have a title. I don't know exactly what my name is. And you know, I wrote the book, and Todd, he mentioned this earlier, and I agree with him 100%, man. With that book, I had the benefit of not knowing what the hell I was doing. And whenever I would reach a point where I wanted to explain why this man was doing something this heinous, I just backed up and gave you a little backstory to explain that. And that was just because I didn't know how to write a book. And it ended up being the thing that propelled it into to what it became. You know, there was no grand design. No.
Right. What do the guys at the firehouse think, Brian? What do the guys at the – do they understand how how famous you are right now? Did I get that?
No, no. And they never will, and I hope that they never find out. First of all,
because you really are incredibly well-known right now in literary circles. People are talking about Brian Panowich in Bull Mountain.
It's wonderful to hear, Pam, but I have to keep in mind that 2 years ago I was a fireman and a husband and a father, and right now I'm a fireman and a husband and a father, that's what I will remain. And the writing a book and being involved in everything that I've been involved in has been amazing. It's been a wonderful experience. It is a dream come true, but I am a straight up Cinderella story. What happened to me does not happen generally to anyone. And so
no,
I have
you're
to
right.
keep that focus right in front of my face. That's, you know, and it's funny because when I first started to get involved with Putnam, when they first bought the book, I didn't know what the career trajectory was going to be. And it was making me nuts. Like what do I do? Or because there's a lot of hurry up and wait. I reached out to a guy named David Joy and David, he kind of coached me through it because everything that happened to David was going to happen to me 3 months later. And when JT called, when I got my first email from him, his email was almost verbatim the things that I was asking David, and I said, "Well, there it is. I'm the link in the chain to him."
Right.
And so as it came through me, I passed it to him, and it's almost like now it's his responsibility for the next guy coming up to pass it to them, so that we all are like connected in that way. And it just so happens
that
the work that we're doing is all related. Like thematically as well.
Well, but that's what this crazy literary world of authors and writers is all about. I do not know a more collegial, supportive group of individuals. And I was talking.
That's why.
That's why I have
a problem with literary. That's why the term literary kind of bugs me a little bit, because when I think literary, I think of these guys in sports coats with elbow patches that are concerned about, you know, how much press they're getting. You don't see that shit amongst these people.
You're right.
And I can say that, you know, I have been so fortunate. You know, again, I walked into this, you know, not having any damn idea what I was doing. But, you know, guys like him, guys like David Joy, you know, Ace Atkins, all these wonderful
Ace
guys.
Reed Farrell Coleman also.
Reed Farrell Coleman.
Reed,
you know,
is great, right.
They've reached out to me and, you know, kind of taken me under their wing and said, hey, this is what to expect, this is what's going to happen, and helped put a lot of it in perspective, you know, so that way you don't have – you're not living in the moment and think, well, this is the way it's always going to be, you know, because they can tell you this is what it's going to look like a week from now, a month from now.
They give you your come to Jesus real fast, don't they?
and they enjoy it
right now, but don't expect it tomorrow. Right.
And they said the only thing that matters is putting the words on the page. None of the rest of this stuff matters.
Amen,
it'll come and go, but you're only as good as the words you put on your page. So you got to keep writing. And if that's what matters,
you've
got to
park your fanny in the chair. Sure.
Right.
Sure.
And just get it done. And you're going to do that whether you know people are buying your books or not. So you got to keep that part true.
Todd, tell us about we spoke earlier. Tell everybody about your process. Like what is your discipline for writing?
Well, because I got this other gig that I do, and, you know, it takes a lot of my time. I get up every day and crank out, you know, about 600 to, you know, maybe 800 words, a little bit more on the weekends. And I do it first thing in the morning, you know, before dawn, before I go to work. And I do it 7 days a week, you know, 52 weeks a year. And I don't stop. Every day without fail. And I don't have critique partners or beta readers or anything. I just write. I write for myself. No one sees it until the whole book is done. And then I hand it off to Sarah, basically. And then, you know, I hand it off to her on a Friday, and Saturday morning I'm starting the next one. And, you know, that's what I do.
That's an incredible discipline, but it almost goes hand in hand with what you do. You have to be committed and dedicated at all times. And the minute you take your eye off the prize, you become a liability.
Right.
In your line of work.
In my job.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly. And it's almost like you've taken that work ethic and applied it to your art. And that's it's fucking amazing to me.
I
don't know another soul who works like that.
I think it's amazing too.
And I hope you keep that work ethic. I want to skip around to one more thing. Brian, I want to talk about the Bull Mountain Art Show. Let's chat about that for a moment.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's an important part of this whole thing.
Okay. This is a pretty cool event. When Bull Mountain came out and we did our launch here in my hometown at my hometown bookstore, it's called the Book Tavern. It's run by a guy named David Hutchison. He's 9 feet tall, and he's a beautiful, beautiful man. He put together a launch party for me, and it was one of the most incredible, magical nights of my life. It was insane. Everybody that I knew in life since I was 12 years old, it seemed like, had come out to celebrate this thing that a son of Georgia had done. And the line was out the door selling the book. I was the biggest seller that he had, and he'd had Nicholas Sparks in his store. So I outsold Nicholas Sparks in Augusta, and that was pretty amazing.
God bless you.
The guy's
not a writer.
Sure he is, man. They're all writers. They write stuff, but he writes. But the thing is that there was no way to recreate that, you know. So when the paperback came out, he had this idea that we should do it a completely different thing, and instead of having a reading or a signing or a launch party, he invited all of the local artists that live around the area, all the regional painters, to read the book and give an interpretation of their interpretation, like in art form. And so they were given the dimensions of the canvas and the book, and they said, "Go do it." And these people these artists have turned in some of the coolest paintings I have ever seen. It's great to hear somebody tell you what they thought of your book, but to see it is incredibly humbling. And so what he's done is he's got 12 artists who are going to display. The show is going to run for a week. The first night I'm going to be there, signing the books or whatever. And then we're going to auction the paintings off. And then, of course, there'll be lithographs of each one to purchase, but we're going to auction all the paintings off, and all of that money is going to go to Safe Homes, which is the charity that I support, which is against domestic violence.
That's another reason why you're my hero, because you know I'm a survivor and a victim advocate also. So I'm so happy about this project, and I sure wish I could be there during the auction. It would be a lot of fun to see that. But
it's going to be online, Pam. We're going to put everything online so that anybody all from anywhere in the world can bid, and we've already got like people bidding on artists without sight unseen seeing the paintings. Like, and it's nationwide, so it's pretty.
Make sure tag me on this. Make sure you tag me on this, because I really want the network to go ahead and get involved too and to spread the word, okay?
Absolutely.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate having both of you here. Scott, I look forward to reading your book. Have your publicist send me one. If they're Putnam, they know who I am. And I'm really interested in the cover, Pam. It was one of the things I was going to ask about it. That is such a cool cover. I love it very, very much. Yes, I have.
Hands down, the most badass cover to come out this year.
It is a very kick-ass cover for sure. There's no doubt. So I'm really glad.
Do you remember when Frank Bill's Donnybrook came out and everybody said, "Holy shit, how did he get that cover, man? That just doesn't happen."
Right.
Well, that's what everybody is saying about JT's book.
I'm thinking how did he get
such a great cover.
I'm thinking this practically sells itself. But you know what?
It does.
But you know what, Scott? Here's the funny thing. covers like that I see from small press, from crime fiction, noir, pulp, and everything else. When
right.
I saw your cover,
right.
and I'm thinking, damn, Putnam put this out? And I was
exactly.
thinking, that is so cool. It's a great cover. Now, you have to understand, I read 400 books a year, and I get probably 10, you know, four times that many pass over my desk every year because I get them from all the publishers. When I saw your book, I thought, that is a book I would read for the cover alone. That's how good it is.
Yeah,
you
no,
know?
They know what they're doing. And when I saw the finished cover, I absolutely fell in love with it. And I think the artist's name is Tim Lane, and I'm hoping that he does the cover for the next one. So, you know, we'll see.
I want Tim to do some work for me. I want him to work on a comic book with me because that guy's incredible. Hey, look,
yeah.
I want to tell you, when I was in Greenville last night, the event got canceled because of some scheduling problems, but there was a Barnes & Noble right next door. So I walked into Barnes & Noble, and, of course, I'm looking for my paperback, you know, to make sure that it's on display where it's supposed to be because I'm freakish about it. I'm talking to the girl, and I'm saying, I said, "Have you heard of The Far Empty?" And she's like, "I'm not sure. Who's that by?" And I said, "It's got a gun on the floor." She's like, "Oh my God, that!" And she points across the room, and you can see that bitch like it's glowing in the dark, and it was just her reaction was, "Oh my God, yes, of course that one." The cover
cool.
alone is worth. Paying for, man, you know, and
it really
when you,
is
when you get blessed
it
like
really
that
is.
Man, you are indeed in a good place, man. Putnam
yeah,
really took
really
a risk
are.
and it worked.
I'm telling you, we're running out of time now, but I want to thank my guest, first of all, debut novelist Jay Todd Scott. His book is called The Far Empty, put out by Putnam. I anticipate wonderful things from this new author, and I can't wait to read The Far Empty. Yep,
yeah, thank
there you
so
go.
Much.
There you go.
Thanks.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, Todd. I'm so glad that you came on such short notice. Thank you so much. And, of course, Brian Panowich, the author of Bull Mountain, multiple award-nominated author. He is up for an Anthony, which is a huge thing. If you, by any chance, hear this podcast and are a voting member at the Anthonys, please consider Bull Mountain. It is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant book. Brian Panowich, you know I love you, and I will see you soon in NOLA. And have a good tour. Enjoy yourself, and thank you for being with me today.
No worries, Pam. I do anything you ask me to do.
I know you
and
are.
Thank you for
best.
Having
thanks,
my friend.
Thanks, Todd.
Thank you for having my friend.
It's been a really fun one. Thank you so much. Have a really good weekend, guys, and we'll talk to you later, okay?
Take care.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thanks a lot, folks. Have a really great weekend. Get a book.